Blog Talk Radio.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repairs. Wandering in my desert, your oasis appears. You're like a long, cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me I need to know.
Mark Rawson, I'd like to welcome you to Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, once a month we have the Men's Spiritual Radio Hour with me and Mike, and we're really excited to have you back. We were actually talking about the show earlier before we went live, and that we've been on almost a little bit under 2 years now. And as you know, from all the different shows we run, we're actually up to about 2,200 shows and our radio archive with a listening audience over 73,000 people. So we're really excited to have the audience tuning in and listening basically in about 14 countries since we're global. And we're really excited to have you on. As always, if you want to find out about this show and other shows that are airing on Spiritual Connections Radio, you can go to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And with that, Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mark.
It's always great having you on, Mike.
Oh, thank you. Good to be on today.
All right. Go ahead and introduce our guests. Who do we got with us tonight?
Okay. Tonight we have Dr. Steve Leibowitz.
Leibowitz.
I'm sorry? Oh, Leibowitz? Okay.
Yes.
Sorry for the pronunciation. So we have Dr. Steve Leibowitz tonight. And Steve has 36 years of experience as an author, public speaker, coach, and consultant. His one-on-one and group coaching sessions, stress management classes, retreats, organizational development, workshops, and interventions are known for immediate enthusiasm that they generate and the long-term benefits that flow from them. So that's just a brief introduction, and we're anxious to learn more about you today. Dr. Steve, or shall I call you Steve?
Either one is fine.
Okay, sorry for butchering your last name there.
Yeah, that's usually a Mark move. I'm usually the one that slaughters the name. Like, I'm pretty convinced that I probably shouldn't be screening callers on the switchboard anymore because who knows who we're going to have show up on the show. But it's great having you on, and I'm going to call you Dr. Steve because I love that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, so I was wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit how you started out, and get to know you a little better.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks, you guys, for inviting me. I think the best way to sort of start is that I have almost always had a sense of inner connection to something greater than myself. And I started out with a traditional Jewish education, Hebrew school, Friday night services, Saturday services, all of that. And as I got into college, I began to understand a broader framework. And I also saw that there's commonalities in all of these things, that no one religion has a monopoly on the truth, on the vision, that the same kind of ideas are everywhere in all the religions. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, I totally agree.
Yeah. So I began to kind of think about that and work on that. but really it didn't, I was a political science major in undergraduate school, and I did my senior year at Drew University in Madison, New Jersey. I was raised in New Jersey. And I did my senior year at the at London School of Economics one semester, and the second semester at the Free University of Brussels. And it was a great experience. It was very broadening, of course, as those things are. And while I was in Brussels at the last semester, and we're talking ancient history now, okay? Kennedy was president, and he did the Peace Corps, and I joined the Peace Corps, that this inner sense of purpose and guidance and cooperation made me think that the Peace Corps was the right thing to do. So I joined the Peace Corps. And when I got home from Brussels, I had a draft notice in my mailbox. And I called the Peace Corps and asked them what they thought I ought to do, given that I had a draft notice, and they said, well, you know, the Peace Corps is an exemption. So they said, okay, come to training. So I went to Peace Corps training in Salt Lake City, and I was assigned to be an English as a second language teacher in Ethiopia. And I was really thrilled about that. Haile Selassie was still the emperor. It was a empire, the Ethiopian Empire. And it was probably the hardest thing I ever did, actually, Peace Corps training. 243 people started out in Salt Lake City that year for Ethiopia, and only 76 of us finished. And I was one of the 76 that finished, and then I got another notification from the draft board. So I went back home to New Jersey, appeared before the draft board. And again, you know, while all this is going on, I'm trying to reach for the center, you know, to see what I should do, what's the guidance here, you know, in a situation like that. It's not the kind of situation I'd been through before. I didn't have any past history to guide it, so I think I was getting some sense of direction. And so I went back before the local board, and I told them what I was doing, and I told them that I was a big John Wayne fan, and I wasn't against a war in Vietnam, and that wasn't the reason I didn't want to go, and I just joined the Peace Corps before all this got so out of hand. So they gave me a year extension. And I went back to Salt Lake, and Salt Lake said, no, we can't send you because it's a two-year tour, and you need a two-year extension. So the local draft board wouldn't do that. I went back to New Jersey, and I joined the Army. And as I reflect back on that, and talk about a journey here, as I reflect back on that, I think that joining the Army probably saved my life. In those days, this was 66, 65, 66. In those days, there was two kinds of soldiers. There was the regular Army, and you had an RA in front of your serial number, and U.S. for draftees, and you had a U.S. before your serial number. RA, regular Army, got to pick its duty assignments, not its duty assignments, but its military occupational specialty. And U.S. didn't. And U.S. draftees were the ones, I think, who were mostly killed in Vietnam. And two or three of the men that I met in basic training, I know, died there. Meanwhile, for me, I was assigned to, I got a communication school, and I learned how to read radar signals. and weapons signals. In other words, it was electronic intelligence. And what it was we would look at oscilloscopes and other kinds of screens, and we would see squiggles, lines, signals, and learn to interpret those signals so that I could tell which ones were from a MiG and which ones were from missiles, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's basically what I was trained to do. And after, is this okay, or am I talking too much about this?
Well, what I'd like to do is kind of move forward and understand more about how you spiritually grew and stuff like that. And
right. Okay. Well, this first, the spirituality was growing all along because I felt like I was, you know, I was guided, not by a voice or a vision or anything else, but just by a sense of what was working. But my first duty station, and this is a big shot in the arm for my spiritual growth, was outside of Washington in Maryland. There's a mountain, and that's the place where Congress and the president and senior bureaucrats go in case of nuclear attack. And so I was assigned to that place. And the first time I went in, they did a drill, but of course, for me, being somebody new, I didn't know it was a drill. And I thought that it really happened, you know. And the people around you don't really say anything. So, again, I kind of like, you know, threw myself onto the spiritual, you know, power and got through that. Nonetheless, I did that. Then I went to Vietnam, and then I went to Germany, and I met my wife in Germany. She's an American doing, she was working for the Air Force over there, and we got married in Ohio when I got out and when she got out. So, again, I think at the time and then looking back on this, all of it was really worked out. And so I feel that trusting this sense of guidance was the right thing to do. So subsequently, without getting, you know, into the history, getting more into the philosophy, I did a master's. The GI Bill was really, really good, and I got two master's degrees out of it, and one in political science, a master in public administration, and the other in healthcare management. And then I went on to do my doctorate. And this is where the spiritual stuff, I think, came through again, very importantly, in that what I did for my PhD was research into how people know what they know. Okay? And basically, it comes down to if you're, you know, inductive or deductive, right brain or left brain, all that kind of thing. But basically, if you're having a sense of, and another related aspect of this philosophically is Plato and Aristotle, two different ways. All these different ways of knowing, and basically our world as we know it and what's been successful for Western civilization has been the materialistic scientific approach to things. The quantitative approach. And we've tended to downplay insight, innovation, creativity, inner knowing, wisdom, those kinds of things haven't had much of a place. So I did my research on qualitative, with a qualitative methodology. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the distinction between qualitative and quantitative research, have you? Is that familiar at all?
Yes, it is, yep.
Okay. So qualitative research is non-laboratory. It's what they like to call anecdotal. It's not rigorous in the sense of statistics. So the research I did was about how trainers, because I was a management development person and a trainer and a team builder at that time, and it was how people doing training know how well they're doing in real time. And that was that's a challenge, really, to be able to do that. We all know, or we all think we know how we're doing, and generally that's true, you know, I mean, in the sense of what we feel is accurate. And so the research I did showed that there's a definite pattern for people to trust what they know. And that's important. You don't have to have an evaluation at the end of the class, or you don't have to have five people rate you this or that, or, you know, use an end of course evaluation. You can know in real time how you're doing, and the methodology for that is in my book called The New Professionalism: Connecting Science and Spirit.
And yeah, after I was just about to head off in that direction, but before I go there, I want to ask you a question that both men would like to know, and that is, you said your first marriage was about 45 years. Tell all the men out there, what are some of the key secrets to keeping a marriage alive long term?
Okay, you have to really value the relationship. The relationship, the marriage itself, has to be something that's important. Our 45 years has not been a bed of roses. And my wife is sitting here now, you know, kind of looking at me. But that's true, you know. I mean, the two people are individuals and separate people, and had their whole lives before they got married as separate people, and they have their values and whatnot. And what you do is, when there's a fight, where what Tanya and I do, her name is Tanya, what Tanya and I do is we try not to pursue that. You know, it's better to be happy than to be right. And invariably, it is better. So I think in the whole 45 years, we've only gone to bed angry, what, two or three times? Maybe. You know, really. So that's really something. The idea is not to, one of the ways you value the relationship, a very practical way, is not to go to bed angry. You know, do whatever it takes not to go to bed angry.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that. So, you know, where I'm going to head next with this is I want to talk about one of your babies, which is Harmony Quest Publications.
Okay.
And people can find that out on the internet at HQPubs, that's PUBS.com. And we're going to kind of work backwards because we're going to talk about the new professionalism, which is it's the science that you were talking about, the science technology. We're going to go back, and we're going to talk about your new upcoming series coming out on dreams, and then we're going to talk about the covenants and the scroll trilogy, such as Deborah and Saul, basically scrolls, the Book of Scrolls 1 and the Book of Scrolls 2. So, you know, one of the things that I caught off the bat that I want to start to talk about, but before I get there, I'm going to ask Mike if he has a question. Mike?
Well, I'll ask this question, but if it's going to come in context when we talk about the books, we can save it for later. But, you know, I was just curious in relation to your book about connecting science and spirit. You know, I was just curious if one of the biggest things you touch on is when you talk about people knowing and kind of knowing where they're going and what's happening, if you believe that's all based on intuition and you know, interested to know if you take intuition, if you think it's more than just a hunch that we have, that perhaps we have something, you know, from a spirit guide or spirit world directing us. Again, like I said, if you're going to connect that in with the books, we can save that for later.
No, I mean, we can talk about it now, Mike.
Okay.
One of the things my research showed is that there's really only one form of energy, okay? And it's consistent with physics. It's what you would get from Einstein and quantum mechanics. And that is, there's just one form of energy. And what we call spiritual is the essence or the original unmanifest form of the energy. Okay so far?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So imagine it works as a continuum, a straight line. So you have spiritual, you have the energy is just there. Think of it as just a plank, a straight line out there. And the spiritual energy, the intuition, the insight, the, you know, the sense of guidance is at the left end of the line. And at the far right end of the line is the physical reality that we experience. Okay, so in other words, the energy goes from the left to the right. It goes from the invisible spiritual essence to physical manifestation. In between, you have the energy goes from spirit to mental to emotional to physical. And all of those things together are different forms of the same thing. So it's like ice is one form of water. Steam is another form of water. It's one thing, water, ice and steam, one thing. And so, in back to your question, spirituality and materiality are different forms of the one energy.
Okay. Yeah, I like that concept.
Yeah, me too.
Really good.
So, in other words, and this evolved, you know, I mean, I had a sense of this, but talking to people during the research and reading, oh my God, the reading, it just came crystal clear. So that is described in the new professionalism. And in fact, that is the new professionalism, because most of us, even now, I mean, my God, still, people are taught the traditional education from kindergarten through postgraduate is all essentially materialistic science, and it doesn't allow for the reality of spirit. And we're not talking about, again, we're not talking about Jesus or Moses or Buddha or anything like that, right? You know, spirit is just the energy. Spirit is the thing itself, and religions are the various brands. You know?
You know, and what I like about that is, you know, when you talk about any of us as a, whether we call us a being of light or a human being or a soul, but we're at a consciousness, you know what I mean? We have our consciousness.
Right.
And so, you know, I like that your concept that you're speaking of, because I think it would help people make it easier to understand that when we have a consciousness, whether we're in a physical body or we pass on, we still have that consciousness on what, you know, what you call the other side once you pass on. But like you said, it's like the same energy. It's like I am, you know, this consciousness of my soul or who I am, whether I'm here in the physical plane or I'm deceased and I still have my consciousness.
Yeah, well, I hear that, and a lot of people are comfortable with that. I'm okay with it. I don't honestly can't say what happens when we pass on. I don't have any sense of I don't feel confident talking about that.
Oh,
so,
okay. But I mean, for somebody like me, like that's the concept that I go by. The same way as you say that you're one energy, you know, whether you're the invisible or you're
right.
the physical,
right?
You know, that's
right.
the concept. That if I'm just a bundle of thought patterns, which makes a consciousness, you know, I can have that consciousness here. I can have it in deep meditation. I can have it when I'm dead. You know,
well,
even if you just talk just without death. You have that consciousness when you're in your dream state. You know what I mean? You're having a dream that you're on the other side of the world, you know, doing something odd or whatever it's going on, but that same consciousness and energy, even asleep, is still the same as it is physical.
Yes and no, Mark. I think if you think, yes, consciousness is persistent. I think that's very accurate. Whether it's the same consciousness or not, is the question. And then you maybe you're talking about ego there in the sense that my identity is Steve Leibowitz or your identity is Mark Rolson or Mike's identity, etc. That's more of a psychosocial physical ego, what we call the ego identity. The consciousness itself is can change. And I think if you look at yourself, I know if I look at myself, and especially when you talk about the relationship in a marriage, boy, has the consciousness changed.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. If I put it more along as soul than consciousness, you know, I guess I'm just looking for that aspects that whatever that energy is that makes us what we are, absolute, you know. To me, it's like it seems like whatever you are, that soul or that spirit is that one energy that stays being what it is, you know, when you go here or the other side. But like you said, it's constantly changing. It's constantly evolving. So,
yeah. And I think you're onto it. And what you're affirming, I think, is accurate and useful, too. And thinking about it as, you know, thinking about the four forms that the conscious, that spirit takes, that the energy takes, spirit, mental, emotional, and physical, when you're, and it's that they're on a level playing field, they're flat. So if you're in an emotional situation that makes you uncomfortable and you want to leave that and have a different feeling or a different consciousness or a different experience, then you can move to the left and move towards your mental state, your mental embodiment, or move to the right towards your physical. So in other words, and again, this is just rudimentary and common sense, that if people are really upset, they go for a walk, right?
Yeah.
Or they do deep breathing, or they get up and pace. That's physical. If you're really upset and you start, you try to think of something else. Think of something nice, you know, like Mom said. So that's
so
moving
let me,
along. Yeah.
I was looking at the write-up on your website about the new professionalism, Connecting Science and Spirit, and
right.
It looks like a very amazing book. It looks like a book that really teaches people how to empower themselves and have the keys that they need to really recognize the different gifts that they have inside themselves. And I'm just wondering, from feedback that you've been getting from some of your readers or the work that you're doing with the book club and stuff like that related to that, what are some of the aha moments that some of the students are having after experiencing that book?
To sort of generalize, of course they're all different, but to generalize, people are getting a sense that they are responsible. In other words, it's from the inside out. That's the thing. So if they're like I was sharing with you before, if things aren't working out at work, if things aren't working out in the relationship, I can blame my wife. I can blame my boss. And then so what? What I've done is I've given my power, to move along the continuum, to change the consciousness, to use all the spirit, all the energy. I've given my power to do that to my wife or to my boss, you know? That doesn't work. It doesn't work. And so having a sense of responsibility that I can make a difference in my own life first, and doing that makes a difference to other people, then that's one of the great insights that come from the continuum from the book. Also, the idea that you can have a bigger picture of your life, okay? That probably you're holding yourself to rules, concepts, ideas that your parents, your teachers, your priests, your rabbis, other authority figures gave you, and that's fine, but it's not really, it limits you. It's not all you can be. You can do your rituals and everything else that you want to do, but that isn't what sustains you. So that's part of what people come away with, that they have the power, that they can do things differently, and they do things differently. The team building, when I use this, in a team building situation and people read the book, well, we do some exercises, then they read the book, then we do some more exercises, and in the course of a weekend, groups that have been really dysfunctional change.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great.
So before we get into talking about some of your other areas and stuff like that, as far as the Dream Trilogy and stuff, where can people find your books at?
The books are on Amazon, so mm-hmm. they can go to Amazon. But if they go to hqpubs.com, that's hqpubs.com, and I think you told them that already, then they can buy them there with PayPal. Then they buy it from me direct, and they get an autographed copy.
All fun and games until you have to sign the 10,000 book.
From your mouth to God's ears, right?
So tell me about the Dream Trilogy.
Okay, well, actually, it's called the Dream Group, and
yep.
That came before all these other books. Okay, as soon as I finished my dissertation in 91, I started working on the Dream Group. And basically, excuse me, it's similar, these concepts evolved, and I didn't know how it was going to come out because I was still working on my doctoral, getting the new professionalism out of my dissertation, but it's the same concept. Basically, it's an adventure, a spiritual adventure story where a group of people, 12 people, and this came from a dream group, a real dream group that I went to at the University of Miami when we were first married, and they do have dream groups all over the place, and you go and you talk about your dreams and you share your dreams and discuss them. And so based on my experience there, there's a group in the book that has 12 characters in it, old people, young college students, retired people, black, white, Latin, everything. It's set here in Miami, so you know it's very rich in all the Miami cultural diversity and adventure and everything. And so the main character, there's three, but the two main characters are a college professor named Josh Wilbeth, and his student, who is torn between being having a career that makes sense and makes money and music. And so Wilbeth is doing research on an ancient Aztec goddess named Coatlicue, who is real. Okay, she's a real Aztec goddess. I did research and looked her up. And she's called the Mistress of Dreams. And basically, Wilbeth's research and mine, he's a sort of a stalking horse for me, he discovers that there are two basic groups that are out there using the technology of the Aztecs. One group is using the technology for good, to guide society towards a world that works for everyone. And that group is called the Azules, which is Spanish for blue. And the other group is called the Rojas, and they are using the energy and the for evil, to cause disharmony and get rich and, just generally create a negative atmosphere in society. And the two groups are using the same energy. So in that sense, it's the same idea that we've been talking about one energy can be used either for good or bad. Mm-hmm. And the people in the dream group connect with Coatlicue. They, four people in the group, connect with the goddess and are involved in discovering how it works. And so they share that. And so there's three books.
When are those coming out available?
Oh, man. Well, not soon. Okay.
I know sometimes a lot of that stuff takes work, and it's great to see that that's coming. We'll all be looking forward to that. I'm going to let Mike come in and ask a question, but let me just redirect you with another question real quick, and that is going back to the new professionalism, can you talk about how, just very shortly, how that that experience has expanded your own personal life?
Oh, yeah. Realizing this has given me something to share with people. And so instead of just going out and hustling and looking for business, I feel motivated to share what I have, what I've discovered, and let people know that they can really benefit from this. And so it's changed my life in that way. It's given me a sort of a center, a focus.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Thank you. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Well, I was actually just going to ask you to talk about your other book that we didn't cover yet.
Devorah.
Yes.
Well, you want the short explanation or the long explanation?
Well,
short because I want to go and cover the next book. I want to talk about the next book too.
Okay. Basically, Devorah is the Hebrew name for Deborah, and I found her on the way to something else, and she's to the extent that you can accept what's in the Bible as real. And my attitude about the Bible is that it's a great book of stories, and it's a place to start thinking about lots of good moral concepts and whatnot. So Deborah is a figure in the Old Testament book of Judges. She was the one and only woman ever to be a judge. And why, and I know before I started this research, I didn't know any of this, so I'll share it with you, and you just tell me when it gets to be too arcane. But The reason she became a judge 175 years after Exodus, right? So there were not anybody alive, but 175 years that they could still sort of, you know, Exodus and the Ten Commandments and the miracles and all that was still sort of fresh in their minds. So it was real, and it was real to them. And they had judges and not kings. Moab, the Canaanites, the Philistines, all the other tribes around them had kings. The Hebrews did not have kings because of their direct experience with God, that the prophets and God did not want them to have kings, because God wanted nothing between him and his people. So obviously disputes would arise, and things would come up, and there was some need for a central leadership. The Hebrews had 12 tribes, and so there was some need for central leadership, so they had judges, not kings. And the judge was sort of a weak king. And Deborah was a prophetess first, and the tribal elders came together, and they picked the judge. And because of her success as a prophetess, they picked her to be a judge. And so the book is about what happened to her. And the Bible has 5 pages only on Deborah. And I have in my book, I'm looking at it now, I think it has, 246 pages. So I filled it in. I filled in the story of Deborah's life. Because there are so many questions about why she did what she did and how you understand it. And again, the concept I shared with you about the continuum, you know, spirit, mental, emotional, physical, the one energy. Deborah, I said it, so Deborah embodied the one energy while everybody else around her was dualistic. So she was like really monotheistic and everybody else was dualistic. So part of her work was to deal with the high priest and to deal with the Canaanites and the Philistines. And the Hebrews were hicks. And the Canaanites had wonderful cities, libraries, legal systems, everything. And they were quite a draw to the Hebrews. So she had a big struggle to keep the Hebrews from drifting over and becoming Canaanites. So there's a lot. It's a very interesting time. And a lot of the challenges that she faced are the same challenges that we're facing. She had political gridlock. She had to try to get her military force, which was nothing really, together to fight the Canaanites, and that was a struggle. She had a sexual revolution on her hands, so that was a struggle. So everything that we're experiencing today was actually going on then as well.
How about that?
Yeah. Scary
Go ahead.
Scary because we like to think we're so evolved now.
Yeah, right? Mike, you got a follow-up question?
No, I was actually waiting to hear about the other book you were talking about.
Yeah, let's talk about Saul.
Okay, let's talk about Saul. Saul, the subtitle, that's book 2 of the Covenant and the Scrolls. And the Covenant, by just as an aside, the Covenant and the Scrolls is the same as spirit and science. The Covenant was spiritual. The Scrolls were science. And so the theme in the New Professionalism and in the Dream Group, the same theme. So Saul I came on Deborah because I was on my way to work on Saul. And going to Saul, I found Deborah. Saul was the first king. Okay? So I shared with you about the judges, right? God and the prophets interpreting God said, no, we want nobody between us and God. Well, by the time Saul comes around, he is about 300 years after Deborah. And so by the time Saul comes around, the people are fed up with the system and they want a king. And they demand a king. And Samuel, you may be familiar with that name. Samuel was a prophet, a really powerful prophet at the time, and very conflicted as a human being. All these people are very conflicted as people. In any event, the people are demanding a king, and Samuel communes with God, and God says, okay, they want a king, give them a king. But again, God is ambivalent about it. Samuel is ambivalent about it. And the situation is there's these 12 tribes, and what tribe is the king going to come from politically, right? I mean, it mattered. So they do a search, Samuel and God, and from the weakest of the 12 tribes, they settle on Saul. And the thing of, you know, that's from their perspective, right? From Saul's perspective. Saul is his father is a wealthy farmer. His life is laid out for him. He's going to be a farmer, you know, a landowner too, right? And so he's a landowner one day, and he goes, I'm shorting this out quite a bit, and he goes to town, and he encounters Samuel, and Samuel tells him, no, you are to be anointed. You are to be God's anointed. You will be the king. So, in other words, an hour before he meets Samuel, Saul is a regular guy. And when he meets, after he meets Samuel, he's supposed to be king. So that's sort of the perspective I organize the material around, because he's a guy trying to figure out what to do, and he has nobody. Kind of like me in the Peace Corps and everything, but nonetheless, he has no examples, right? They didn't have any kings before, the Hebrews didn't, but of course they had kings all around them, and they were not really pretty decent. So so that's that book, and it his son he has four sons, but Jonathan is the son that's most frequently mentioned, and his daughter, Michael, M-I-C-H-A-L, both of them are mentioned, but I build them up quite a bit because I make Michael sort of like a warrior, sort of like a Xena. Isn't that right? Wasn't that her name? The warrior? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I make Michael kind of like that, but
okay.
Both enough.
Thank you for talking about that. Yeah, I know that's it's so exciting. I'm actually going to redirect you into telling. I want to know from you, what do you think about ego?
I think. In the world, at the far end, far right end of the continuum, in the world, you got to have an ego. You got to have an ego. But the ego is fundamentally opposed to spirit. And if you're big, big with your ego, you're out of touch with spirit.
Mm. Very cool. Mike?
I was actually going to ask about if you could just kind of maybe briefly tell us a little bit about some of the coaching services that you offer, and I'm not sure, is there other things you offer besides coaching, like seminars and different things like that?
Oh, sure. That new professionalism, seminars. Coaching is basically one-on-one. I'm a certified Coach U graduate. Coach U is like the original coach training center. There's a lot of them now, but when it started, there was that. And basically, I do the coaching on the phone. And I find that the coaching works best. I've had clients I've never met. And the coaching works best for them and for me when we do it on the phone. Because it's easy. There's some anonymity, and it's easier for them to unburden themselves, to get real.
And how do people arrange for that?
Email me. Go to HQ Pubs. Phone. There's a phone. They can phone. Yeah.
So where are you? Where are you? I see on your website it says join Devorah and Dr. Steve. So does that mean that is that somebody you channel, or is that an actual?
No. Devorah came out about 15 months ago, and for the last 15 months, I've been doing most of my blogs as Devorah.
Oh, okay, okay. I was just trying to figure that out. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Well, people really enjoy that. You know, when I go to a meeting or something, they'll say, "How is Devorah?" Or "I really like that," or whatever.
Very cool. Well, you know, the one question we always like to ask people before we wrap up the show is, what is the biggest lesson in life that you've learned so far?
Trust. It's inside out first. And then there's something that the rabbi Jesus said that I think is really useful, and that is, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all else shall be added. So in other words, to me, that means do the spiritual stuff. Work in spirit first, right? Do the mental, emotional, spiritual stuff first. Then the doing is easy.
Very good. Thank you. Why don't you go ahead and give out your website to everybody again?
Okay. It's hqpubs.com, mm-hmm. and that's short for Harmony Quest Publications. So hqpubs.com.
Very cool. Okay. So thank you for being on the show, Dr. Steve.
A pleasure.
And as always, Mike, it's always great having you on.
Oh, thank you both. It was a great night.
Very cool. So, as always, everybody, you've been listening to the Men's Spiritual Hour on Spiritual Connections Radio. This show will be available for replay off of our website, and you can find out information about the replays, our other shows, and everything at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
The cost left my heart broken, so I had it closed for repairs. wandering in my desert. Your oasis appears. You're like a long cool drink of water. I'm thirsty, that's clear when I taste you. I know you, I know you, I do. So can you feel it? Tell me, I need to know.